Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Everyone, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Brian Muka. Brian served in the Navy as a bomb tech, and after transitioning out, has become a wealth and tax mitigation specialist. He's also the author of Your Secret Superpower, Tame Fear to Thrive. And we're going to discuss how he helps other veterans and veteran-owned businesses in their transition, getting out of the military into the civilian world and doing that successfully. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Brian. I'm glad to have you on.
I'm happy to be here, Scott.
Yeah. So for the listeners who don't know who you are, maybe they haven't heard of you before, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So where do I start? I guess, man, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a steely-eyed missile man so bad. I wanted to fly in spaceships, and I like read everything I possibly could on that. I watched Top Gun a whole bunch, and they got me good. And the new movie is great too, by the way. You know, I thought I was going to be Tom Cruise and flying fighter jets, and I had all of that. I wanted to go to the United States Naval Academy, and I had that dream until about my freshman year of high school. And then I was like, I don't know if I want to do the military forever, you know?
Right.
So junior year of high school, I went to Boise State, and they put on a mock government for us at the College of New Jersey. And we didn't pay for anything. You know, we were hand selected or out of my class. And we got to learn how government worked. And one day there was this veteran, old guy, like maybe in his 80s. And I watched him with his walker hobble over. He bent down. Like, what's he doing? He was picking up a gum wrapper somebody just carelessly threw away, right? Gets back up. Like, it's all real time. Since the time I started the story to now, that's about how long it took for him to bend over and pick up the piece of paper. And he threw it in the trash. I saw it. And I have chills, man, from head to toe. I'm like, I owe it to that guy to stay on the watch when he can't. You know, bury his buddies in combat. That wasn't enough. Let me come back and be a good citizen. That wasn't enough. Let me train the next generation how to be good citizens. Okay, what am I going to do? Well, I thought I was going to do run hot rocks, you know, the nuclear power plants on submarines underwater. And I was one of a handful of midshipmen to get selected to do that. It flew out to Guam and then Saipan. I think I spent 7-12 days on the beach, and which was awesome. It was like the best vacation until I got onto the submarine. And then I was quickly cured of living inside of a watch devoid of sunlight. I came back, and our class advisor, Sean, he, Naval Academy guy, drove ships for the Navy, hated it, wanted to be a Navy SEAL, was the SEAL class leader, bailed out. And he tapped me on the shoulder. He's like, you need to start joining our explosive ordnance disposal morning routines. I'm like, what business do I have? And one of the things that I got to work through was my self-doubt. So we'll get more to that. That's how I manifested the early end of my career. We'll get to that best, worst day of my life. And I was hooked. I started training at Det Earl, New Jersey. And then as fate would have it, my dad at Lockheed was training in his Lean Six Sigma, the lieutenant commander that put together summer trainings for the Naval Academy. And they got to talking, and they're like, what does your son want to do? He goes, my son's crazy. He wants to be a bomb technician. He goes, I actually am coordinating that summer training. Does your son want to join? Because in the past, ROTC midshipmen couldn't do that. It wasn't open. It was only Naval Academy. So I told my command, I'm like, hey, I want to do this thing. I'm like, no way. I'm like, well, what if I pay for it? That was the best $428 I ever spent. Spent 2 weeks, and I just felt it in my heart, Scott, like, this is what I want to do in the Navy. And I wanted one of those rigor belts, kind of like people want a black belt, like, but I wanted to earn it. And I would. I got back from that trip. I lit every single candle in church. I said, God, if it's possible, I want to be a bomb technician. I'll never forget the day where I got a call from my class leader, Andrew. Brian, you got it. I'm sorry, sir. What did you say? Brian, you got it. I kept hearing you didn't get it. Like, I didn't believe. Right? And he's like, what part of you've got it? You know, you're going to be a special operations officer. You're not getting. And the whole time I was in the community, I thought I was an imposter. Like, I cheated, man. I had good PT scores. had an engineering degree at a great university, and you know, I was a lot better than I thought, you know, but I cheated. What I really did, and this is one of my superpowers, I found a third way in, you know. I knew the guys at Den Earl. I was the first Navy ROTC midshipman to go in this, like, I'm resourceful. And we'll get into that, like how I got into medical sales after my Navy, but that's a little snapshot of who I was. Mm-hmm. Blew up my life, like completely. And man, that was a tough journey. And I worked with an incredible mental health professional, therapist, Talia Gershon. I'm forever grateful for my adopted Jewish auntie. And my three Moleskine journals. And I got to start the process of getting myself back together. And I remember the day in her office, and I was working through something really painful emotionally. And she said, "Where did you get that from?" Like, that's how I'm metabolizing and working my way through this pain. Because I'd read Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And I learned that there's a space between stimulus and response. And it's that only in that space do we have the opportunity to choose. So I would become a breath instructor. I would use language. I would write. My journal became like another therapist. She goes, "This is good. Like, I've never seen this before. I've been in therapy for 30 years. Keep going, kid. You got something." And in that moment, Fear Sherpa was born. Like, oh, what if I create a guidebook to help other people who blow up their life in life's avalanches to then thrive again? So my uncle, as I share that with him, EOD also stands for everyone's divorce. So I did that too. And as I was sharing, I was newly living on my own. We just sold the river house. You know, it was like all the things they promised would be great. You know, all the money. We lived on the James River in Richmond, rooftop deck, whole deal. It's happy. It didn't fit. And I was telling him this and he goes, "Well, it's pretty amazing you wrote a book on that. And you're like a chef and now you get to eat your meal." So I got another opportunity to go again, like do a second rep. And what I realized, well, it wasn't fear, it was self-doubt. And so I'm writing a second book now, called From Doubtful to Dangerous. And if you find yourself in the doubtful phase, I want to talk to you because I'm making a best fit line for your story. I've learned a lot. And what I do now professionally, in addition to connecting resources and ideas and people like Scott and I are doing right now, we had a great conversation before this. A lot of sharing. And if you're in the veteran community, we need you, right? If you want to travel fast, go alone, you know that. And if you want to go far, travel together. How can we share, right? And
exactly.
The American dream is counting on you to fight for it again. And the antidote is community, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, the book is called From Doubtful to Dangerous. And I realized that people struggle the most with fear. They struggle the most with money. And our net worth never can exceed our self-worth. The third most valuable measure of true wealth is money. Number two is time. Do you love the way you spend your time? Do you have enough of it? Do you get to spend it with the people that you love? Doesn't matter how much money you have, you don't have time. And then the most important thing, and Scott, you're on video with me here. When I look at these beautiful brown eyes in the mirror, if I don't like what I see, there is no amount of money you can pour into that chasm to fill that. Can't do it. And you'll sabotage anytime I briefly go above that. And yeah, look at lottery winners. So that's who I am. That's what I'm doing. And here we are.
Yeah. So let's take it back a bit and talk about your time in the Navy. I've always been fascinated with the guys who are out there who willingly go and screw around with bombs. I guess it takes a special breed to do that kind of work. But as a bomb tech, you probably had an interesting way of dealing with fear, dealing with that self-doubt and things like that. How has that helped you through your career as a bomb tech and also later on in life in what you're doing now?
So being a bomb tech is all about risk mitigation. What's the safest way to solve this problem with respect to also time? So the less time I have, the less safe I can be. The more time I have, the more I can remote do things, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing, so for example, if you're going to enter a house and everybody steps in the welcome mat, that'd be a good place for a trigger.
Sure.
I fell in love with my Sawzall, which means you know, we can create what we need in entry, exit, that type of stuff. And so every time I'm at the movies, like the velvet rope doesn't apply to me because I can just apply the Sawzall idea to the rope. Also, it applies almost everywhere. How can we cut through the crap that doesn't matter? What's a safer way? How can we change the environment to suit our needs? Like, that's huge. Mm-hmm. The other thing is it matters. Scott, this show matters. Like, you need me to be present, fully present in this conversation with you. And what I learned is if I'm forward of track of where I currently am, I'm talking about nowness and we're talking about consciousness a little bit. If I'm here now, I have everything I need. So if you listen to the show and you're worried like crazy, you're in the future. If I'm worried about running out of money, I am future. So in the eye of the hurricane and that it's traveling forward, I'm at the leading edge. That sucks.
Right.
Just be blasted with 150 mile an hour plus winds. And so, okay. So don't be in the future. Be here now. Actually, if you're listening to this, let's do that. Let's take a deep breath in and let it go. Smiling is the next part of that. Breathe, smile. The smile changes the whole story. So if it feels hard, good. The third step is gratitude. So I'm Christian, you know, I believe in co-creation, that and Lord, make my will yours and your will mine. And if I'm in that safe pocket, anytime it's hard, I know that it's forging me into the man of my dreams. So it feels hard, it's tough love. But, oh, and by the way, I created this. I create every adversary in my life to bring out my best. Like that's, if that's not true, fine, right? But man, that is a great perspective to have. It's really so much better than being a victim. It happened to me. I've had years of that shit.
Right.
That doesn't end well. So breathe,
no, it doesn't.
So breathe, smile, gratitude. I learned. Jumping out of airplanes at night, that was terrifying. To leap into the milky blackness, the nothing. We're called to do that every day, actually, right? I mean, that's the ego death. That's who did I think I was? I'm going to leave these bad habits behind. I'm going to stop procrastinating. I'm going to stop using porn or alcohol or whatever the thing is, the thing that's holding me back, got me here. And then I got to kill it off, jump into the black inkiness. Start a podcast, get on stage. They're all little deaths, right? Practice dying so we could live, right? So yeah, so those are some of the things that I got to enjoy in training.
Yeah, and that, like so many like good perspectives there too that you mentioned. And even just the visual of that jumping out of an airplane into that nothingness, that blackness, that just... I mean, there's so much trust that goes into something like that, trusting your equipment, that your equipment's going to, not only is the parachute going to open when it's supposed to open, when you pull the cord and it opens, but that you know how high off the ground you are with the altitude and everything. Kind of need to know these things. And if the equipment's not working and you're not able to see these things and do what you need to do, then you're literally just taking a blind leap and just hoping things work out. But, you know, you have a little bit of faith knowing that you do have good equipment. You do have the skills and the resources. You've been trained. You know how to do this stuff. And so any of that doubt, you got to leave that in the plane before you jump. Otherwise, you're probably not going to be able to jump. Like it would be very difficult to just be like, oh, well, screw it. I'm just going to go, you know?
Yeah. Otherwise, that's a death wish, right?
Exactly.
Will Smith has the single greatest video I've ever seen on fear. And he talks about skydiving. And he's like, man, when you're on the ground, sleeping in your bed, you're the most afraid. That's when you're the safest. And when you're falling to the earth, that's exhilarating. When you're the most dangerous, that's when you have the most exhilaration.
Yeah.
So the size of our exhilaration is proportional to the size of the fear that we can dance with. It's really powerful.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And that's a good way to think about it too. Kind of encourage people to take those leaps, not just necessarily out of an airplane, but you know, those leaps in life that where you're entering into a scary situation, you know, something that's maybe new, it's daunting, it's a big, big thing that you got going on, but, you know, being able to take that leap and actually do something like that, it will enable you to achieve things. Whereas if you just sit in your bed and nice and comfy thinking about those things and not actually taking that leap and doing anything, you're not really going to accomplish anything other than, you know, maybe a good night's sleep. But outside of that, you're not going to really accomplish anything else. So yeah, definitely.
So let me add one more part to the hurricane analogy, right? So I got track, which is worry, right? Stress, run out of money, those things, future stuff. It is very possible to be both future and past at the same time, which is another kind of hell. The past is shame and guilt.
Yeah.
And so the question, Scott, I have for you and your audience, so if you're listening to play along, what's more true, your imagination or your past?
Well, I would say the past is definitely true because it's something that's happened and you have experienced that thing. It's true. However, your imagination, I can also see how it can shape the future and your perspective on what you're thinking about. If you're, like you were saying before, if you're worried about money, if you're worried about big project, or if you're worried about something going on in the future, not going your way, not going right, you know, that you may actually create it so that that happens. So I guess it depends on your perspective on that, but I suppose both could be true.
They are, both of those are true. And so it's the analogy of which wolf do we feed, right? So if you're going through something tough, most people in my experience get locked into the past. And they keep running the same loop. I did for a long time. I'm not good enough. Good enough. I don't deserve it. Look, I do deserve it. Right. And we're going to leave that just hanging out there. Right. And so, you know, if you look to your left, first thing you see to your left, there's a banner from my CrossFit gym, Valkyrie Fitness. And I imagine that. And now it is on a canvas. Right. It now exists in this world. Right. What did you see, Scott, when you looked to your left? What was the first thing you saw?
Painting over there.
Yeah. Somebody envisioned that and then they painted it and they painted it and they painted it again. And they're like, finally, like, oh, what I imagine now came up to, or my belief and my skill set came up to what was in my imagination. That's more true than the past, because I forget who said this. If you want to predict the future, create it.
Yeah.
And we have that opportunity only every now that we have.
That's true. Yeah. Because I think, like what I was saying, is if you are imagining the future, no matter what you're thinking of, if you're thinking of it as doom and gloom, all of hope is lost, you may create that just through that level of thinking. But if you are, on the other hand, if you're thinking of it like, I have unlimited potential here and I could achieve just about anything that I put my mind to, and, you know, you have that sort of attitude, well, then that also may be true too. So you may be able to create way more than you're giving yourself credit for, or do more things, or experience whatever, just through the simple act of just believing that you can do it.
The most critical thing in that is the identity, right? For a long time, my identity, I am the ripped warrior CEO. What would he do? Another great cheater one is, if I love myself, what would I do? You know, people are like 100%. This is pretty close. It can't be 100%. High 90s. Compliant with giving medication to their pets. They almost always do that. Why? Because they know that their dog or their cat deserves it. I think it's like 17%. And I'm making up that number. I don't remember what it is. But it's, you know, less than an eighth of people will do it for themselves, because they don't think they deserve it. So who would I be if I deserved it, right? Like that, if I do the identity first, then I do the acts, the be, do, have, makes it a lot easier to achieve what we're imagining, right? Now, the other thought, the other part here is, I had to get really good at mind control, thought control. This isn't sinister or dastardly. Maybe it is, depending on who you talk to. I want to be a good curator of my own thoughts. And so right now I'm having a struggle when people acknowledge what I've shared is brilliant, or that sounds really cocky, right? That's how my inner monologue takes it, even as I say it, right? So I'm like actively working through this, and I'm doing this real time with you guys, right? So I was just on a show and someone shared a couple really nice things about me. I don't even give it any time or thought. It doesn't get any space. Immediately, my emergency procedure, and I learned this in skydiving, right? I graciously receive before I even have a chance to think, you're not good enough. You don't deserve that. Oh, that, right? You guys know how to mitigate compliments and not take and just deflect them. I graciously receive. Because anything I say is 60 to 70 times more powerful than anything I think. And 90%+ of our thoughts are habitual. So think of that awful thing that you share. Mine is I'm not good enough, right? We all have it. We learned it somewhere. It's not even our thought. Either learn it at school, your parents, the Navy, you know, somewhere, your ex-wife, my ex-wife, right? It's not even my thought. So when the repetitive thought comes up, what can I put in its place? It's like giving up alcohol. What are you going to replace it with? I like Kava. I like Kratom. You know, it's my substitute. What's substitute thought? And if it's I'm not good enough, what's the shadow belief? That means I'm precious. If I think that I'm not good enough, the opposite is also true. When does hot become cold? Same continuum. When does poor become rich? When does not good enough become precious? It's all story. And we can write those stories. It's amazing.
Yeah. And so a lot of people do this to themselves, though, where they basically sabotage themselves through that inner monologue that goes on, where they're telling themselves that they're not good enough, or that they're not strong enough, or they're not capable, or they're whatever that negative thought is. They keep hammering that away. Like you said, it becomes routine. It becomes habitual, where they are saying the same things over and over to themselves. And it gets to the point where they really believe that to be true. Whether it is or not, doesn't matter. They start to believe it. And when you believe these things to be true, it's going to affect your actions, how you behave. And that really could be sabotaging any chance of success or happiness or fulfillment that they may have in their life. So what can we do about that? How do we work around that to tell ourselves a different story?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And that might be the question, especially right now, right? Take command of your own mind and the thoughts and the voice. And first question, who's speaking right now? Right? Have I ever chosen a negative thought? Ever like, oh, I want to think I'm not good enough. No, I never would have chosen that thought. So where did I get it? Between 0 and 8 years old, I'm in a state of self-hypnosis. I'm being encoded. So a lot of the repetitive thoughts that you have aren't even yours. And so if I were to trace my thoughts back, I learned from my dad. Not by anything he said. Super supportive, great dad. I watched his actions and I modeled his behavior. He showed up in that way. What a gift. Okay. That's step one. Step two, everything in my life that has gone off the skids, I created, right? So the second I can mea culpa, my fault, my responsibility, that means I get to create what's next. That's why I asked you about what's more true, the past or the future, because literally everything I look at was in somebody's imagination and now it's here.
Yep.
What if we did that with our lives? And also, what if that negative thought was your adversary daring you to your greatness? It doesn't happen when we lay on the couch, right? It doesn't happen when we're safe and comfortable. We're growing. And so, wow, I have a sparring partner that I created, right? I created it to help me remember who I actually am, right? That's what I think this life is. It's a really elaborate game of hide and go seek. Scott, we just met, but like, you know, it's like this artifact along the trail and I can stub my toe on it and like, turns out it's a genie lamp.
Okay.
Oh, what a cool artifact that I found. Be really different if we came to Earth and we're like, oh, we get to co-create and everything's perfect. Well, that's kind of like winning the lottery or the blackjack table every single time. Like you're gonna get bored of it. So this process of self-discovery and climbing the mountain, like you're on the most incredible journey that there is, the journey back to loving yourself, right? How do you do this? Well, plant medicine's a helpful tool, therapy, coaching, journaling, breath work, turning everything out, just going inside, maybe looking at the stars. We're floating in the ocean, like in stillness. There's a lot to unpack and we don't really have time in that, but like start, it'll come to you if and when, right? So like I wrote this down earlier. What I love, I get more of. What I hate, I get more of. And I think the hate is more powerful than love in the beginning. Hey, I don't want to feel like this anymore. That's an important kind of rage part of this. Well, why do I feel like this? What do I want to feel? I want to feel peace. Okay. Well, how can I feel more peaceful right now? How can I affect the feeling first? And then the thought doesn't control the feeling. It's the opposite, right? So if I notice right now, I feel anxiety and I get this often. And some of it's story, some of it is practice. But it feels late at night, 2 o'clock in the morning, it seems to be a popular time for this. Feels like a diamond pressed on my chest. Anybody worried about running out of money or maybe you're going through a divorce? Like, you know, the avalanche has come, right?
Right.
So is your breakthrough, right? It's the breakdown of the break. Like those are married to each other. And so I feel it and I breathe into it. I don't try to run from it, right? If I run from it, it gets bigger. So what am I here to learn? What does it feel like? What's the color? Does it have a sensation? I'm going to breathe right into it. And I'm going to breathe out. All right, see you. I'm with you. I'm safe. I'm safe to feel this. 4 minutes later, it's gone. It's gone. I don't want to know anything about it. I don't want to go into the story. I don't want to go into the victim of it. Like, I want to 100% feel it. Weep if I have to. Like, to the point of, like, feeling like I'm purging. And then it's gone. And the tears, they dry. And it's like, I was ready. My conscious mind was ready to let that trauma go. I don't know anything about it. I don't want to be. And the other thing I know too is when I feel the diamond press, I rewrote that story. So when I was in high school, I was on stage a lot. It was Tony West Side Story, first chair trumpet. You know, I performance guy, right? I used to get terrible stage fright. Like make me nauseous kind of stage fright. And by the way, if that's you, good. Because there's a lot of keynote speakers. They get on stage and they're like, this fucking matters. I got to show up today. I got to be now, right? Feel nauseous because it matters. So I rewrote the story though. I found a more fun way to do that. What if this is the feeling I get before I do something awesome? That's just what it feels like. It's a sensation. Right. I wrote a story and now that's the outcome. I like living in that world, right? It's a much more fun game to play. The diamond press for me, when I feel that, I'm like, oh, I'm going to rip the cover off the baseball tomorrow because I feel like this now. The pendulum swings the other way. So if it feels like that right now, you are breaking through. It's a little eaglet ripping out of its old shell. And I really like calling it molting. Molting can't be a comfortable process for the animal going through that. And then they step into their new skin.
Right. Like that. That analogy that you just gave where you just sort of change the meaning behind that feeling, that emotion that you're getting, that sick to your stomach feeling before you're about to get on a stage. Like, okay, that feeling is now associated with, I'm about to go do something great. I'm going to go hit it out of the park. I'm going to do the greatest speech that I've ever given. Or I'm going to go perform the best I've ever performed, or whatever it is. Those negative feelings that you have, just kind of in your mind, just associate it with something else. And I know that's easier said than done, but I think that's a great way to think about it, to help people who are dealing with maybe some sort of anxiety, like performance or stage fright or whatever, to help them reframe their mind so that they're not in that state constantly and then just worried about the past or worried about the future or just not able to grow and continue to move forward and do those great things. Sometimes it's just that mindset shift to get yourself thinking about things in a different way. You know, even like pain, for example, if you stub your toe or you hit your thumb with a hammer or something like that, that pain tells you something. Okay, something is wrong. You did something wrong or something was done wrong to you. This hurts. Where your brain is telling you, boom, there's something wrong. But once when you recognize the fact that something is wrong, that pain doesn't matter anymore. It's done its purpose. It's told you, hey, there's something wrong. Okay, well, if I stop doing that, then it doesn't matter anymore. I don't need to worry about that pain anymore. So it, in a way, it's sort of the same idea with just talk about going up on stage, because I know a lot of people have that sort of thing talking in front of large groups where if you're feeling those butterflies or that sick to your stomach feeling, it's like, okay, well, this is just telling me something. It's just telling me, okay, I'm about to go do something great. Good luck. Get out there, do your best. And that's all we can really ask of you. And then like, forget about it. Forget about the rest of that pain or that uncomfortable feeling, because it doesn't matter anymore. It's doing nothing but holding you back if you just focus on that.
Right? So the psychology of this and the hormones that get released in this, the story that we write to explain the events that we are experiencing, the five senses, basically, humans are story generators and we fit story to fill in missing pieces. We don't know how that's going to go, or at least that's the story. Like, unless we visualize, the visualization is just as true as if I did it, right? So if I imagine what I want to have happen enough times, it's like actually shooting the basketball or skiing the super giant. That's why professional athletes and the Olympians, they do visualization. What if instead of visualizing your failure, what if instead I visualize my failure, I visualize exactly what I want to have happen, and I spend 51% of the time there, I would have the life of my dreams. I would, right? I got to feed the good wolf 51% of the time, and it all unfolds because it seeing isn't believing. Which not Downing Thomas, these miraculous cancer cases, that's not how it works. I got to believe it first, because otherwise I'm going to self-sabotage, right?
Yep.
And Walt Disney, I love this. And this came to me a couple years ago. He was teaching kids how to build their dreams. And he embedded it in song, which is fascinating to me. Because if we lose our minds, Alzheimer's, dementia, or whatever, we're going to remember two things, smells and song. So he embedded this knowledge in a song. And he said, well, I'll get to the song in a second, but I got to tell the story first. So Walt Disney died, as we all know.
Yep.
And he died right before the park opened. And so Roy was being interviewed, and the interviewer asked him, isn't it a shame that your brother's not going to get to see his park finished? And Roy just smiles because he knew. And he said, oh no, it is us that finally get to see it. My brother saw it the whole time.
Yep, absolutely.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. When your heart is in your dream, there's no request that's too extreme. That's it. That's the recipe for creation. Go create it. And so I think that the imagination is more true than the past, because I'm not that guy anymore. He died. I killed him off at least twice.
And you keep recreating and revising who you are and creating that new version every single time, right?
God, you're getting on like one of my favorite topics. So English, as we study other languages, English is regarded sort of as a slave language. And the reason is, and I didn't know that. I knew that fact, but I didn't know why. Nouns. We like using nouns to describe things. Okay. You're a Navy, or you're a combat veteran, right? I'm a Navy guy, right? Or I'm an executive coach, or I'm a wealth advisor. Okay, great. I was at a breathwork thing a couple of weeks, and it was like massive upgrade from what I learned at Wim Hof, and it is some next level stuff that I can't talk about, but it's awesome. It results in a lot of peace. And for PTSD, TBI, those, it's an incredible tool. And the woman shared with me that a Native American word, and basically what it meant was baying. Like, you are as expansive as the bay. She described me with a verb. And so instead of thinking of myself as a stationary noun, what if I regarded myself as in transition? I'm a verb. I'm progressing. I'm living. I'm humaning. And humaning is like, I got to get it wrong to figure out. I don't like the way that tastes. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to burn my heart again, because that really was fucking horrible. I'm not going to settle for crumbs anymore. I deserve much more. I had to settle for crumbs first to know that, like, oh, the feast is way better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascinating, right?
And again, all of that is just changing the way you think about things, changing that mindset. And so I think, you know, the biggest takeaway so far for me from this episode is that we can affect our outcomes in a positive way and in a negative way just by the way we think of things. And if we allow ourselves to continue that self-sabotage, that negative self-talk, all that negativity that we very often have floating around in our heads, it's, I think, probably pretty natural that people do this to themselves. But if we don't change that, then we can't really expect any better outcomes. So it's really just a matter of making a conscious effort to say, where, like you said, where is this negativity coming from? Where is this originating from? Because it's not me saying, I'm not good enough, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm not fast enough, or whatever. It's not me saying any of that stuff. It came from somewhere, it came from some other experience in my life. Maybe someone else told me that, or some other experience that I had. And it's really just a matter of saying, hey, screw that. Who cares about that other stuff? And just changing that mindset, right? And making yourself a look at things in a more positive way.
It's all happening for you, even the mistakes. We can't get it wrong. We only get it right. It's like when you make a wrong turn when you're driving, you still arrive at your destination, right? All roads right. take you there. And you said something interesting. You said, do this to themselves. That could not be more accurate, like in every single possible way, right?
Themselves. Yeah. I had a whole thing that I forgot.
I just had a brain. All right, here. So this is great. Guys, if you're on stage and if you get what you're going to say, I'm glad this is happening because I rehearsed this years ago. And here's what I do when I'm stressed and I can't remember. I take a deep breath in. I got it back. And so too much stress and excitement. And so what I was saying, and do this to themselves. In the coaching world and the personal development world, a major idea is that no one's coming to save you, Scott. Did you ever hear that before?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they're all trying to save themselves, I think.
That's great. Yep. Yeah. So that's very true. And I think what I'm really fascinated by is what am I saving myself from? So within, so without. If I believe it, I create it. If I love it, I create it. If I hate it, I created it. The reason no one's coming to save me is because I made all of the boogeymen. The only thing that could hurt me is what I'm afraid of. You can't save me because I created it. I'll just create another boogeyman when you're done saving me. It all changes once we realize I created whatever scenario you find yourself in, the scenario that I find myself in, I created it to teach me something. There's a benefit to it. And now I get to come to this podcast and share with you, like, been in the desert for 3 years, staring at the chasm, like some gnarly thoughts and ideas. And like, what do I know? What thoughts are mine? Running out of money, getting divorced, losing what I thought my dream job was. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Whatever you're going through right now, it's getting you ready. And you called it in for your best self, for my best self. And there is no I. It's we're doing this together. Like if you're listening to the show, you called it in. And I'm doing this podcast because I needed it. I needed to share what I found and end of this conversation that maybe you're having, and who knows what will happen from here.
Exactly. And when you share your story and the other guests I've had on this podcast, they share their story. There's people out there who are listening to these episodes, and that story that gets told could just be the spark that helps that other person find their path, the better way through their life, right?
I agree. And I just thought of something else. If you feel stuck, if I feel stuck, I'm going to go read something or I'm going to go listen to a podcast because the downloads that I'm seeking, it doesn't have anywhere to land yet. Like, you ever try to remember somebody's name from like another country that you've never heard of before? For me, it's like almost impossible. I got to like write it down. I got to see it. And I like write it on the forehead and I imagine it's really hard, right? And so when I'm waiting for inspiration and I don't have the basis for that, I'm missing a piece. Like I need to read something. I need to have a conversation like with you. Like I'm learning as I'm speaking, right? I'm putting things together that I've never put together before. So as I add knowledge, now more downloads, more inspiration, more creativity can come because now I have a seed crystal to build on. So thank you for reminding me of that. If you feel stuck, go read or talk or, you know, listen to something that's uplifting and that you find inspirational. We don't do any of this alone.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something my wife and I tell our kids all the time, is that we're given two ears and one mouth so we can listen twice as much as we speak, because we get more information from other people. Whatever we say is stuff we already, we're only regurgitating information that we already know when we speak. But when we sit there and we listen, or I suppose you could say the same thing with reading, we're taking in information that other people know. And we're allowing that information to come into us. And now we have that information and then we can use that to our own advantage. But if we are the types that are just sitting there talking all the time and not absorbing any of that information. So I like what you were saying there with, you know, go read something or listen to a podcast or whatever. That helps us grow and become better versions of ourselves, right?
I love that. And I love how excited your eyes are, as you said. Like, that's an exciting exploration. And I would offer an invitation to explore one more thing. It's not just the ears. It's also the heart, right? So as I'm communicating, I've got the words. It's only 7%. And if I sync up the breath to your breath, and if I imagine a tube between my heart and your heart, I have more information coming in, and it's spookily accurate. Like, send very complicated, complex feelings and ideas accurately to the heart channel. And we can talk quantum mechanics and phi and those things. Quantum entanglement is really cool, especially as it pertains to communication. That means that we can communicate without respect to time nor distance. So like, that could be your future self in 10 years, giving you advice right now. Like, I want that more than anything. Oh, wait, I have it, right? Imagining what, you know, how old would I be? A 49-year-old Brian would share, right? Or like with my grandparents or you and I. Like, I've got the heart vibe and I don't know where in the world you are. Scott, where in the world are you? But you're surprised.
Surprise, Arizona. Yeah.
It's a real place, guys. I thought the person shared that with me was like just fucking with me. No, it's real. You know, we're 2,000 miles away and it's like we're having a conversation heart to heart, you know?
So I also wanted to talk with you about the Tech for Troops. You mentioned that you're involved with that. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what that's all about and what they do for veterans and the troops?
Yeah. So I'm so grateful for Mark Casper and Tech for Troops. I was a part of a networking group called Synapse. So think like BNI, but for do-gooders. Each one of our meetings was centered around nonprofits. So I met Mark Casper, executive director for Tech for Troops, and I fell in love with him. I sold him on the idea of being part of a network, and it was incredible for his business. I didn't know that I needed to be part of Tech for Troops because I was still pretty bitter about the early end of my Navy career and still very much in the victim. And what Tech for Troops does is they do computer training. So securities, IT, job skills, that type of thing via computers. They also issue computers to our veterans. Really hard to apply for jobs with just a cell phone. So there's a homelessness part of that. They're meeting a huge need, community, employment, that type of stuff. And Mark's whole process is to hire veterans and then graduate them, you know, to other security jobs or IT or that type of thing.
Awesome.
They're always taking donations. So pretty much everything except for printers and like old school tube type TVs. And then they recycle that, the precious metals, and that's a source of funding for them. So really powerful mission. They're out of Richmond, Virginia for sure. And I think they open Texas or Wisconsin. I forget the other, but they have two locations now. Probably means I need to reach out to Mark Casper. So Tech for Troops, incredible nonprofit and really doing some great work for our veterans.
Yeah, that's great. And I like talking about all of these different nonprofits that are out there because, again, I think before we started recording, I started mentioning to you that, you know, there's so many organizations out there, whether they're nonprofits or not, doesn't really matter to me. But they're out there doing things to help out veterans. And if the vets that are out there don't know that these things exist, then they can't take advantage of the resources that are available. And so, you know, I at least wanted to mention Tech for Troops and talk about what that does, but I'll have a link to their website in the show notes. So anyone who's looking to get involved with that or donate or, you know, anything like that, check out the show notes. There'll be a link there for that as well. But again, just another resource that's available to help out the veterans, you know, getting involved with technology and things like that. So, before we wrapped up in the intro, I mentioned that you're the author of the book, Your Secret Superpower, Tame Fear to Thrive. Tell us what that book is all about and where people can go to get a copy of it.
Yeah. So, man, this was a labor of love. And that book was a compilation of 10 years worth of going into the chasm, armed with my trusty red moleskin piece of survival gear. And there are tears and the wisdom and quotes, and it's how I made sense of my life's avalanche. And it's really meaningful when people read it. because it helps me remember that suffering is never in vain. I just haven't seen the so what of it yet. And that's my story. My story of how I called it long-term fear. I didn't know what doubt was apparently when I wrote this book. So I need to write a second one, but how to be with fear. And if a bomb technician named Brian, if it's okay for him to be afraid, it's okay for you too, but it's not okay to let fear run the show. And so, you know, it's breath work, it's journaling practices, it's quotes, it's a guidebook. If you're in an avalanche, it's for you. And if you're not, it's really important to learn how to be with people who are going through the avalanche. You're part of the rescue gear. And there's no way I would be here without the support of my friends and family and my wife at the time.
Yeah. You know, I like what you just said there. And, you know, if you're not going through that yourself, you're part of that rescue plan. But I think another important aspect of it is if you're not going through that avalanche right now, doesn't mean that you won't be next year or 5 years from now or 10 years from now. So
yeah,
learning to deal with that avalanche before you're actually in it is a whole lot more beneficial than trying to keep your head up above the snow piling on top of you as it's piling on top of you. So I think learning about that stuff early on is probably the key to survival, right?
It is. And I think of, I got to listen to Steve Seabolt talk a couple times. I wrote a book called 177 Mental Toughness Secrets. This book's awesome. He has this weird relationship with a reporter. And this reporter will call, and he called one time and they did this interview in one of his mansions. And he's like making fun of his like vision board. He goes, "Did you like glue that together yourself?" He's like, "No, I use Scotch tape too." Like, which probably like, I don't know why you waste time. I'm like, because the billionaires I hang out with do. And he called him another time and he was like, "Hey, why do companies pay you so much money to teach mental toughness?" He goes, "That's not what they teach me. That's not what they pay me for." He goes, "Well, what do they pay you for? I can't teach you mental toughness. You got to do that yourself. I'll give you the blueprint." And so I heard this quote the other day, "This too shall pass." I read that before. And I've only heard that in the downswing part of life. "This too shall pass." If you're high on the hog, this too shall pass, right? Life is seasonal and the hurricane's coming. And you can choose to fortify the house and put the sandbags up and know what to do when fear and shame and doubt show up. They'll show up at the worst time. There's not a convenient time for that to happen. When would now be a good time to already have your emergency procedure in place? Much like I did when I lost my train of thought, like I already knew what I was going to do to find my way back. You're going to find your way back.
Right.
So I don't have the only way to do this. I had a way. I wrote it for me, basically. I had the intention of writing it for you. I really did. And I realized like I ran towards bombs and you probably didn't do that. Right. So there's a couple screws loose here. And hopefully it will inspire you to write your own procedure. This was mine. It's what worked for me. Write your own and share. You're going through hell. Share it, because fear, shame, and guilt, it exists kind of like a vampire in the darkness. And as soon as you share it on a podcast like this with people you care about, that vampire burns up in the sunlight.
Absolutely. I've had several people who have been on this podcast. It was the first time they ever really shared their story, the darkness in their lives in a public way, you know, outside of maybe a therapist's office or something like that. But they said after they got it out there, they got everything off their chest. It's about as public as it's going to get when it's out there on a podcast. Literally anyone in the world with an internet connection can listen to it, right? And they felt so much better that they were able to just get that off their chest. And so, yeah, absolutely. Tell your story. Doesn't have to be as public as being on a podcast, but tell your story. And you never know who it's going to help and what it might inspire other people to do with their own lives. And in your case, you know, you wrote this story for you, your particular journey and how you navigated through all the things that you were dealing with. Even if someone reads it and they can't take 100% of everything that you say and apply it to their lives, they may be able to pick out several things from that and be able to say, okay, well, this will work with my situation and let me try this. At least give it a try. Maybe it's something they just hadn't thought of before, and or a different way of thinking of the same thing that they were dealing with. And, you know, it just will help other people. I heard this quote recently, fail fast. You know, you try something, it doesn't work. Okay, good. Check that box, move on and try something else. The quicker you try those things, the quicker you can move on to the thing that ultimately will work for you. So, you know, I think that is just a huge part of any journey that we're going through is just trying things, figuring out what works, what doesn't work, and then moving on from there. So yeah, I'm glad that you got that out there and told your story. So thank you for that. And thank you for joining me today on the show. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today and hearing the different perspectives that you have and, you know, how people can kind of shift their mindset and work through that self-doubt, that negative self-talk and all that kind of stuff that they have going on. I really do appreciate you coming on and joining us and sharing that with us.
My pleasure. And thank you for helping me find meaning for the pain that I went through to deliver this elixir after my time in the desert.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So get a copy of my book, Brian J. Mucha on Instagram. Shoot me a message. I've got links to what I'm about. And also LinkedIn. Spend a lot of time there too. So, you know, veteran business owners would love to learn how to serve you better. And if you know folks in that position, that's the force multiplier. So the antidote is the community. So thanks for being part of that.
Absolutely. All right. And we'll have links to all of this in the show notes. So to your social media and everything like that, we'll have that in the show notes. So anyone who wants to get in touch with Brian, please check out the show notes and we'll get you in touch with him that way. So thank you again, Brian, for taking the time to join me and sharing your story.
Thanks, Scott. What a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.